The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and family closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up. Seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today, we've got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
and Ryan Pills
in the house.
So we're a little thrown off on our normal Wednesday schedule.
Monday schedule?
See?
Wednesday schedule.
Way thrown off.
It's actually Thursday that we're recording this.
Awesome. So Monday night, we had our normal game night at the Red Barn, our monthly get-together at our friendly local game store. Sarah and I were in Ohio, which I'm sure we'll talk about some of those adventures soon. But you guys give us the rundown. How was our first game night after TantrumCon?
It was awesome. Everyone was talking about how awesome TantrumCon was. We had new people that were at TantrumCon that came to Red Barn because they wanted to hang out with us, and they were just saying how much great time they had. So
very cool. It looked like that was what I saw in the pictures that you guys posted. I saw several new faces that I was like, wait, I think I might have seen that guy at TantrumCon. So that was pretty cool. Did you guys play anything super fun while you were there?
I got to play a game called Unknown, and you're basically meeples in this sequentially generated map. You're flipping over tiles and hoping you don't reveal monsters. It's some sort of, like, post-apocalyptic. So there's, like, beast meeples and maybe, like, zombie meeples and these hunter meeples. It was really neat, the different types of meeples. The gameplay was fairly simple, and we died, like, really fast. So
who was somebody, did somebody bring it, or was that one of
ours? It was brought by Wes, I believe.
I think, was he talking about it?
No, it was brought by John. I played it with John and Wes.
Cool. I think I heard somebody talking about that the previous week or something, or recently. I've heard somebody talking about this game, and they were like, you need to play it.
Yeah, I guess he saw it at a con and thought it was really cool, and it was a lot of fun. It was also brutal, so I want to try it again and see if we can actually make it.
Okay, cool.
I played Pirate Tricks from Soaring Rhino. I taught it to four or five guys, and then I played Gizmos and beat everyone.
You're not supposed to beat everyone when you teach, Kevin.
I know.
Be nice.
throw
the game. I don't know if we already talked about this or not, when we played Steam Court at Tantrum Con, I may have won.
Well,
I came one card away from winning at the other tables.
Oh, okay.
And then I just, it was a one I couldn't get rid of.
I was trying to figure out what to do. I was in the Duke seat, which we all know is overpowered.
Really overpowered.
And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, oh man, I totally got this in the bag. Should I throw it and let somebody else win? Or should I just try to beat everybody and play?
Yeah, you can't win the trophy and the prizes.
Right, I know.
You brought the trophy and the prizes.
Francesco won.
He did, yeah. So. Well, actually, I did. I don't think he was at my table.
He was at my table.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Cool. So we had plans.
Yeah, four tables going, which was pretty cool. And I did, and like as we were getting closer, I was like, "So which would you rather have happen? Like, you beat the game designer and you feel like a champion, or the game designer beats you and you realize how like much you have to learn?" And they were like, "Teach us," and I was like, "Okay, I'm out."
Well, I heard you have new or cool ideas for next year's Steam Court event.
The funny thing is, I feel like I should have had these ideas already this year.
Right.
We had too many things to plan this year for the first year.
I don't know if you know anything about Steam Court, listeners, but Ryan and I put this game together. We played it a bunch of times. It kind of, the general concept was introduced to us by someone else. And the way that I first played the game with this other guy, he went all out with the game. His game wasn't steampunk themed, we added the theme to it, but the ladder trick, get to the top thing, like when he plays the game, the royal table, the top table, like they get all the hors d'oeuvres, they have the nice linen tablecloths.
That's terrible.
The queen gets the comfy chair at the top, and then at the scum table, the dude, like the bottom guy, sits on like a bucket.
they're not allowed to have food or drinks. They just have to sit there in their misery.
So I think we're going to go a little bit like that. Maybe the bottom vagabond doesn't have to sit on a bucket.
Some croutons.
Right. But we're definitely going to deck it out next year. I think Katie has already been like, we need like a Pinterest board, basically. She's been saving photos of cool looking steampunk decorations and things. And yeah, we're definitely going to make that like an ongoing, a reoccurring mega experience for next year.
Very cool. Can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pumped about that. And a number of other things. I even talked to, here's a secret preview for some people. I don't even know if I've told you guys. Another intern possibility. I talked to Mike, whose last name we'll reveal later, who's definitely interested in joining us and will probably be submitting new segments to the podcast. So that's a cool thing. He played Two Rooms and a Boom at our Tantrum Con and hosted that and made a lot of fun out of that experience. And I think we were already talking about ways that we're going to amp that up next year too. Oh, man. We got a whole year.
No real explosives.
Well,
I don't think the hotel will ever invite us back. Can't actually blow up something, Will.
Okay, maybe not.
Did you get to play anything at Red Barn, Melissa?
Yeah, I had the privilege of teaching games to someone who came for the very first time. Hadn't come to Tantrum Con either, but
they will next year.
She had found us, I think, on Meetup, and so we did games like Reef. We did Forbidden Island. So there was another one. I can't remember what it is at the moment, but.
How did she do? Because I know when she came in, she was like, I like the classics like Settlers of Catan. And she named off some, which are good games, but they're like old school now. Like, that was 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, she's like, I don't know any of these games on the table. And we had, you know, maybe 30 games to choose from. But she dived right in and really enjoyed it, picked up on the strategies. So, yeah,
cool.
I think it was a good fit. I hope she comes back.
Yeah.
One other thing that I heard at game night that I thought was really cool is one of the couples that's been coming regularly met another couple at Tantrum Con, didn't know each other, played a bunch of games at Tantrum Con, and then, like, last Saturday they met in Spartanburg at, like, the library or somewhere and played games. Or maybe it was Barnes & Noble. I don't know. They played games, like all
hours.
Day. So they made a new friendship with another couple, and they were, like, really excited about it and happy to share that. And
I'm really excited about that. That's super cool.
Tantrum Con brought two couples together that could share in the hobby.
Together. That's awesome. That's very
cool.
Meet
your new friends at Tantrum.
Right? And then go to Barnes & Noble for 5 hours. Very cool. Sarah and I had some fun. We didn't play too many games. We went and visited.
We missed you at Red Barn, but tell us all the awesome things that you experienced and
had a fun trip. We went up to Ohio to visit my grandparents.
Yes.
And had a really great visit with them. We snuck in a skiing trip with the cousins, which was super fun. Xander, our 6-year-old, was going face first down double black diamonds at the end of the day. Scared me to death, but he was good.
Oh, he did amazing. And
super fun.
Was crazy excited about it.
Sarah got in one board game.
Yeah, my one board game of the entire weekend was my brother-in-law found, he's a farmer, and in rural Ohio, he found this game at a thrift store called Rich Farmer, Poor Farmer. It's actually on BGG.
I've heard of this, maybe.
It's basically a reskin of Monopoly with a farm theme.
And
so
an octagon
he loved
board.
It. Yes, the board is an octagon. But other than that, instead of hotels, you have to plow your fields and then plant your fields and fertilize. And
I didn't get to play it, but he walked in
and
he was like, okay, you guys are here. Teach me how to play my game.
The mechanic for how the hotels work is a little different than the regular Monopoly. So we didn't get a finish. It was, we could tell, going to be a long game.
Were you going to flip the table? Is that where you were?
Your mom's table, her kitchen table is massive,
Amish.
So no. Couldn't flip that one.
The coolest part of the weekend, I don't know if it was the coolest part, but one of the cool highlights for the weekend.
The coolest part on your trip back.
On the trip back, yes.
Was that my folks live just outside of the Hocking Hills of Ohio. And in the Hocking Hills?
The Hocking
Hills.
Hocking Hills.
Close, yes.
Hacking.
Hacking. Is Ravenwood Castle, which I think you guys have been to, Kevin and Melissa.
Yes.
We did a Doctor Who murder mystery
weekend. It was pretty cool.
We stayed in the Duke's Dungeon.
Nice.
Ooh. Yes, for
the
whole weekend.
It's a bed and breakfast that is a castle in the middle of nowhere, which is pretty cool.
Yep, the outside looks like a castle, and the inside looks like a castle. It's very cool.
We posted a couple cool photos of it. As we were getting ready to roll out, we caught on Facebook that James Hudson and Derek Funkhauser and a bunch of other people.
Yeah, John Gilmore, Scott Caputo.
Yeah.
Some of the illustrators that he works with, like the Cuddington, Mr. Cuddington.
Yeah. Yeah. They were all hanging out apparently at the castle for like a design weekend retreat. Mm-hmm. And so we semi-jokingly, like, we were like, we're crashing your party. See you guys in a few hours. And they were like, come on over. Let's go. Let's do it. So it wasn't really out of the way, hardly at all. 10 minutes out of the way. We swung by the castle and popped in and said hi, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Our kids were excited. There was the oversized chess set outside, so they didn't even make it inside. They saw that and were like,
chess. The grounds, the castle grounds are just cool, just walking around inside and out. So
we showed up, and there was like a maiden sweeping the, I think she probably was on staff, but she was like sweeping the drawbridge as we walked in. It was really cool. We got to come in and kind of see some of the prototypes and things that they were working on. I don't know. I think they were there all week.
Yeah, they are.
And they were playing a bunch of their other games that they've published, like working on expansions and building out storylines.
Like Tidal Blades.
I saw some action on that.
Yep.
And just having a fantastic time. We walked in. And you enter through the drawbridge area, which is cool, past the Shining Knight in armor.
Yep.
You walk around the wall into, like, the main dining hall area. The Great Hall. And there were, like, 6 tables in there. 3 of them had prototype games on them. Everybody was in the middle of playing. Very, very cool. James gave us the tour and kind of showed us through all the different rooms in the castle. And they invited us to stay and play some stuff. And we were like, we're kind of on our way, we gotta go. It would have been cool. Like,
you should have stayed an hour.
I know, we should.
Oh well.
I should have
stayed time. An hour, but it was already gonna be 11 p.m. when we got
there. What's another hour?
But that was cool. That was a lot of fun. And it was cool to just see everybody and shake hands and say hi. And yeah, that was our weekend. Cool. So.
Well, let's jump into a shout out from our episode sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by Return from Subroutine LLC. Their game, Sidekick Saga, is coming to Kickstarter on March 5th.
Great. Yeah, Melissa and I played a prototype, and we have a preview video of this as well, but we will talk more about this in our Kickstarter Conniption segment.
Which is coming very soon. I think we also have a couple interviews this episode. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And then we got a bunch of games in Kickstarter to talk about. Why don't we go ahead and welcome our first house guest to the house. Let's say hello to Mark Spector.
Hey!
Hey, how are you guys?
We're doing very well. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Fantastic to be a guest on the Tantrum House.
That's right. We love it. Thanks for joining us. You have a game on Kickstarter right now.
No, so no, silly goose, not Kickstarter. This is a pre-order. This is going around Kickstarter. I know. Can you imagine a publisher not using Kickstarter?
Why are you even on our show? So tell us about
tell us about that process.
What gave you the kahunas to think that you could pull off something as fantastic as that?
Well, the truth is, I didn't know if I could. It was really taking a chance. You know, I've used Kickstarter mostly as my business model since the beginning. But I've always wanted and felt that at some point I wanted to put on my big boy pants and see if I could take a step away and make it without Kickstarter. So, but well before we met, I did Kickstart on real estate, and that was successful enough that I was actually able to just print Stroop as a traditional publication. And then, of course, I went back to Kickstarter with Pocket Ops and then Endeavor Age of Sail and the Artemis Project. But one of the things also that made me step away from Kickstarter for this project is that it's actually my first localization. So when we did Pocket Ops, we had a partnership with GDM Games in Spain, and they produced the Spanish language version of Pocket Ops. And they presented me the opportunity to localize to the North American market a bunch of their games. And I looked at the opportunities and picked up Shikoku. So we, put that contract together, and now we're actually taking pre-orders directly from the website, directly from the Grand Gamers Guild website.
Wow, fantastic. So you've got it published already. You're doing pre-orders, right?
Yeah, we're doing pre-orders. It is in production as we speak.
How long of a turnaround time do you have before that'll be produced?
Well, the game actually was released in its initial incarnation at Essen this year. So the game is done. I mean, mechanically it's done. The files are done. It exists in reality. What we did was we got a hold of the files, and even though the rulebook had been translated into English, it was definitely a translation that was done by a foreigner. So Josh Capel, my guild maestro, put his very talented hands to the rulebook and rejiggered the whole thing so that it reads like native English to someone who reads native English. So the flow of the rulebook's a lot better, But other than that, I mean, the card files are done, the board files are done, the meeples are the same. It is, from a component perspective, the same game. So it's really just a matter of having it produced, and it's ready to rock and roll.
Very cool. So pre-order window, does that change any once it's actually published? Is it the same price once it hits the street? How does that work?
Sure. So what I'm doing, again, because this is a big leap, right? And when you put something on Kickstarter, these days the Kickstarter market is looking for, you know, what are they getting by supporting it on Kickstarter? Mm-hmm. And as games go, Shikoku didn't really have a lot of stretch goal potential, especially because I wanted to get it to market for the convention season. I didn't want to go through a Kickstarter campaign. So because I have access to the North American market and not the worldwide market, what I've chosen to do is basically free U.S. shipping and then discounted shipping outside of the U.S., which basically, for my purposes, is Canada and perhaps Mexico as well.
Okay, very cool. So we've talked a lot about the process. Tell us about this cool game.
Sure. So Shikoku is a racing game, and I have to admit that from a consumer perspective, I'm actually not a huge fan of racing games. There's very few and far between where I find a racing game that I think is really cool. But one of the things about Shikoku that I find so fascinating is that it's actually not a race to be first. And in fact, the person who finishes the race by reaching the top of the steps is not going to win. Ooh. Quite specifically, you actually, depending on the number of players, you actually want to jockey to be either second or second to last. And then depending on how many players there are in the game, and the game plays 3 to 8, there'll be either one winner or there'll be multiple winners, depending on the step that you're on. The game tells the story of basically climbing the temple steps to reach the top. But it comes from philosophically a Buddhist type perspective. And okay. So the idea is everything in moderation. You don't want extremes. So you don't want to be first and you don't want to be last. You want to be second or second to last. And those are the folks who win the game.
Okay, very cool. Who did the artwork for you guys? Is that Capel?
No, Josh did not do the artwork. The artist on the game is actually named, and I believe it's a Spanish woman, so I think I'm saying it correctly when I say Amelia Salas.
Ooh, sounds cool.
I do enjoy the colors in this game.
Yeah, aesthetically.
It's really fun artwork. It's almost that cutout paper. Yeah. Paper shapes, which, mm-hmm. you know, makes me think that Japanese rice paper type textures.
Sure, I can pick up that vibe. Absolutely. And the pastel palette, I think, really just, it's, you know, it's kind of like if you took Takedo and made it into a racing game as opposed to a set collection game, that's the tricky kind of feel that it has to me, that you're constantly jockeying off of what the other players are doing and responding to that. And Takedo has that feel as well.
Yeah, very cool. I also think it's gutsy. This is just me being a tight-fisted graphic designer, that you changed the color scheme of your logo.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I got to give credit where credit is due. You know, Chris Kirkman is someone I worked with at the beginning, and he helped bring Unreal Estate to life. And it was actually him who designed our company logo. And one of the things that is really more incidental than anything else is that the logo seems to me to be quite conducive to that type of manipulation. And so even though the product itself will be branded with the company logo and the company colors proper, it has, yeah, I know. But for brand identity purposes, you know what
I mean?
Right.
I'm on board with that.
But it still allows me to play around online. And so, I mean, we've known each other for a while, but you guys are all busy. And over time, though, there is a Valentine's Day incarnation of Ophelia, and there's a Shikoku incarnation.
Okay,
there's
cool.
A Christmas holidays incarnation. There's about, I don't know, I think like 5 or 6, Ophelia images that I rotate throughout the year just to stay fun and
keep
stay with
fresh.
The seasons.
That's so cool. Yeah. I think Kevin suggested that once and I throat punched him. So,
yeah, it is. It's a great logo. I'm really proud of it. Chris did a bang up job.
That's cool.
Now, I know you have another game that I believe will be coming to Kickstarter soon, Endangered. Are you going to retheme your logo for that game as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We actually have a tigerized version of Ophelia
nice.
That we put up online a long time ago. I mean, so long ago that most people probably don't even remember seeing it. But it's really cute. Her hood is tiger-striped, and she has a little tiger tail curling around the front of her of her logo. And so I'm really proud of it. And I think you guys have seen it, and some of the team has played it. So you probably know or remember that tigers are kind of like the flagship animal of the game. Mm-hmm. But we can talk about that a lot more because, at least according to Kevin, I'm coming on again in a couple weeks to talk about that.
Excellent. So tell us, where will we be seeing you next? What conventions are you going to be at?
So my next convention will be Breakout. I'll be driving up to Toronto to hang out with Helena and Josh. And
cool.
I'll be doing demos of Endangered, and I'll be doing demos of Shikoku and Endeavor and the Artemis Project, which I actually had the proof copy when I was at TotalCon this past weekend. And oh, awesome. It was just super well received. I mean, people were saying things like, man, now I wish I'd backed it. Or things like, oh my gosh, I'm glad I backed it because now I've played it. It's as good as I expected. So that was very gratifying. And, you know, some of that might just be lip service. They're sitting with the publisher. They're not going to be like, you know, table flipping or anything like that. But
you never know.
Anything's possible. But no, it was really good. Really well received. All of my events at TotalCon were completely full. So, and next awesome. Year I hope to be doing those at Tantrum Con as
yeah!
well.
Yeah!
So I know I missed your show this year. I had some good conversation with you guys behind the scenes. It didn't make sense on a couple levels, but it's already on my mental calendar to be a part of year two.
Excellent. We're excited about that.
That's awesome.
Sarah did some demos of Endeavor.
I did.
Yay!
I did. That was the first event to fill up at Tantrum Con.
That is very exciting.
And then I ended up pulling in some people who were on the waiting list, and then actually demoed it a couple more times. So
awesome. And did you guys give away a copy too? I can't remember.
We did. We did. Right, that cool. was one of the
Grand prizes.
Yeah, grand prizes for the event.
Yeah, awesome. We had a lot of fun with that, and I agree with that feeling that you're saying. It's really funny that, like, I don't even design any of these games, but anytime I have an opportunity to play, like, an early prototype before it comes out, and then I play the real game with people, and they're like, oh man, I super love this game. Like, I know they're not giving me lip service because they don't care what I think about it. But I get that, like, just a hint of that same thing where I'm like, I suggested that they use blue meeples instead of pink, you know, whatever, like some stupid thing. And there's a lot of satisfaction in knowing that people enjoy the things that you had a hand in putting together. So
yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the greatest things about the community we work through is that it's so small, and you can get, I mean, there's so few layers between the gamer and the company president that you can have frank conversations that can actually have a tangible effect on things. It's awesome. It's great to sit down with the gamers and shake their hands and watch them get it, and then watch them appreciate it and start to really implement strategies and stuff. That was probably the most interesting thing of running the demos, is watching people sort out the strategies and having it click into place.
Yep, I love that. And I especially love that when it's a game when you've played it so many times and you've tried every strategy and you could, like, watch them and you're like, yeah, on his next move, he's totally going to score all the points that he's been saving up for.
Or if they do something out of left field that you weren't expecting. There was one amazing game of the Artemis Project that these were the most fantastically snipey group of players I've ever seen play. They didn't know one another, but, man, they were on top of one another, outbidding each other and outdoing each other left and right. It was a singular game, and I really enjoyed the heck out of watching that experience.
It's a blast. It's a super blast. Awesome. Well, we will definitely look forward to connecting with you at a convention soon, and definitely, if not before Tantrum Con, we will 100%
see Yeah, and it. Be sure to check out Shikoku on Grand Gamers Guild website.
Yes.
That is pre-order only, so you won't find it on Kickstarter.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. We'll catch you next time.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. It's so fun to be with you tonight.
Bye! Very cool hanging out with Mark and learning about some of their non-Kickstarter process games. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, it's always good to hear other ways to bring games to the market. So, very cool. Thanks for the info, Mark. Look forward to playing Shikoku.
But I guess now we'll go look at those games that are coming to Kickstarter
in our Kickstarter Conniption.
Kickstarter Conniption!
This episode, we'll be talking about 10 games coming to Kickstarter the week of March 4th, 2019. Start us off, Kevin.
Well, Thundergriff Games is launching their game, Iwari, on March 5th. And they this game is for 2 to 5 players. It takes about 45 minutes to play. And it is an area control game. There are some different things for this area control. You are going to be collecting different color cards and playing the color cards to place out your tents and totems on the board. And the board has different colored regions. So as you place your tents on the board and totems, they're going to score. Tents will score halfway through the game when the card deck runs out. And then at the end of the game, your tents and totems will score when the game's over the second time the deck runs out. It's interesting how it works, because how you score is based off of how many tents are in each region. So if I have majority control and there's 5 tents, then I'm going to get 5 points. But second place gets the points based on how many the majority control player has tents of. So if there's 5 tents and I've got 5 and I have control, then I get 5 points. And Melissa has the 2 tents of the 5, then she would get 3 points.
So, if Kevin had the 3.
Yeah, if I had the 3 points.
I'm not sure why, but any game that has totems in it just allures me.
Yeah. So the totems work. You can only place totems in an area max at the number of tents held by the majority player. So if, go back to the example of 5 tents and 3 are held by the majority player, then only 3 totems can be built in that territory.
Okay.
So
interesting.
Yeah. So there's this like lots of like push and pull with, should I place tents, totems, and how do totems score at the end is basically are the connections between the territories. So if they're and you have to have majority control of the totems on both territories in order to score at the connection, and it's the number of totems in each of the territories.
Yeah. Lots of balance.
So you could have totems that don't score at all because you weren't able to get majority in a neighboring.
But there's territory. Like 25 connections on one side of the board, so there's a lot of ways to get points from your totems. So it's definitely worth putting totems out.
Have you guys played that one, or is that just what you understand about the game?
I have played the game, and there's a video preview that people can watch.
We should all watch that together. Mm-hmm. So how does it scale?
I've played it just 4 player. There's two sides okay. to the board.
Cool.
I think I like the one side a little bit better because the territories are a little larger, so more stuff's going on in the territory. The other side has a lot more territories, but the territories are smaller.
Okay,
so
interesting. Cool.
Oh, and the scaling does work because I do remember there is some connection points that get blocked based on the number of players, and yeah. Some cards are removed. So, yeah, this definitely scales fine.
Makes sense.
Yeah, cool. But with anything with area control, a majority, like personally I think higher player counts is more interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't like a lot of 2-player head-to-head games. So for me personally, I wouldn't want to play it at 2 players.
Yep. Melissa.
On March 8th, Queen Games is bringing Copenhagen to Kickstarter. This game is for 2 to 4 players. It plays in about 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah, hour less.
And it's a kind of tile laying, pattern building.
Yeah, I definitely see the pattern building.
But each person has their own kind of skyscraper sort of building. And it's empty at the beginning, and you're collecting cards. And with those cards, when you play them, it allows you to get these Tetris-like pieces that you can put onto your board. And you're trying to build out rows and columns, and there are windows or bricks. And if you can get a row of all windows, you're going to score more points than if, you know, some of them don't have windows. Same with the columns. And the pieces are different colors, so you're using different cards to get the different colors. And we played it, actually, tonight.
Twice,
yes. And it was really interesting. It has that puzzly aspect to it, of which cards do I collect. And some of the pieces are limited, so you may be like, oh, I really need that 5 piece in yellow, but someone else takes it before you get to it. And,
yeah.
Or Sarah takes all the green cards before it gets to your turn.
The thing that I thought was cool, I don't know if you mentioned it, is that as you build tiles of the same color, it costs you 1 fewer card, and so there's motivation in the game to build your tower with kind of same colored tiles, but since those colors are limited, especially in a four-player game, like we ended up, I got lucky.
You got really lucky. We weren't paying attention.
Did not pay attention. Yeah. Well, this is his first game.
He doesn't know how to destroy you.
Yeah, we're all like battling each other out. And I was like, I'm just going to take all the red cards. None of us took, maybe Melissa took a couple.
I had one red. Yeah.
But it's like, none of us took any red cards. And Will's like, I got all the red.
How do you win? Oh, you just get 12.
Yeah, and the different colors have different shapes. Mm-hmm. So you might want a specific shape, and it's only in the yellow and red, but not the green and purple. Yeah. So there's that aspect. And it basically is a bit of a race game, because the first person to 12 points mm-hmm. wins, or when you've gone through the deck twice. There are a few other things in it. There are power tiles that you can use for special actions. And if you cover certain spots on your building, then you get access to those tiles, or you can refresh them. So it was fairly simple to play, but I thought that there were a good amount of choices in the game and laying the tiles.
Yeah, I was surprised. The first game, I thought it was going to end with the card draw, and Melissa pulled it out. Like, one turn before I could.
I finished my column with all windows for that 4 points that got me right to 12.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked the art. The style of it is very nice. Like, the illustration was super fun, and that made the whole, like, building a skyscraper experience very cool. I enjoyed it.
Ryan.
Coming March 5th from Motherlode Games is Mech Force International Defense League. This is a game about piloting mechs, okay. which is near and dear to my heart, so I was like, I gotta check this out. So you're a pilot of a mech, and there's these alien invaders, and you're trying to fight them off. I believe it's partially competitive, partially cooperative, in that you have to work together to fight off these alien invaders, but you have to be careful who you ally with, who you work with, because you all share the rewards of any battles that you fight. There's battle points, I guess, that are split up between you. And ultimately, you want to be the player with the most fame at the end. You know, the most bragging rights, being the best mech warrior. So as you're playing the game, you get different rewards. It sounds like there's battle points, skill cards, resources that you can then use to upgrade your mech or your pilot. And there's some variable player powers and worker placement. I'm not sure how this is all going to go down, but I want to see it. especially
like it's full
with
of
the mech
goodness.
Yes, it looks like it could be cool. The art is really interesting. I'm not sure what I feel about it. It's got kind of like this retro comic vibe.
A little bit of like original Transformers, maybe?
Yeah. So check it out. Coming March 5th, Mech Force. Will, what do you got?
So Garp Hill Games and Renegade Game Studios is working together to put out, guess what? Paladins of the West Kingdom.
In the series of the West Kingdom series?
Correct. So it's another red box game. It's 1 to 4 players. And in this game, you've got all that familiar great Miko art, same iconography. In this game, it looks like you are building your own individual kingdom. And in this, so everybody has kind of their own city board where they are getting resources and building up their powers and their resources, their strength and their faith and their one other thing that they're building, kind of influence. And then what it appears, how the game works, is there's a central board and baddies come out of there. So you've got like Vikings and Byzantines, and they're coming to attack your city. And so you're working to build up your defenses, collect as much faith victory points and influence as you can, and defend against the oncoming horde. Pretty cool looking character art. I like how the Miko style has evolved a little bit. It cracks me up that like the Vikings TV show, I don't know if you guys ever watched that. Mm-hmm. They have like super cool hair that's like very modern looking ish Viking hair.
From what I understand, Vikings were a well-groomed
and had sweet
culture.
Hair and nice tattoos.
Yeah, they would have like little combs that they carried in their pockets as they went on raids.
I feel like some of that is reflected in this game. Like the character art is like a modern twist on old-timey illustrations. I don't know, pretty fun. Looks very cool. I'm sure it'll be a great addition. I'm sure they've got some great and well-refined mechanics as well. So be looking for Paladins of the West Kingdom. Sarah, what do you got next on your list?
Coming March 4th to Kickstarter is Get Billy the Kid. This is from Caper Games.
It is another rendition of their Get series. They already published the game Get Adler.
Oh, yeah. Your kids like that one.
Yeah, my kids really
love
like that
one, I should say.
Yes. That one comes out a lot at our house. And this one is a Western theme of that in a similar format to that game.
That makes so much sense. When I saw the title originally, it didn't click with me, Billy the Kid. And I thought it was just like, get the neighbor kid.
Like,
I don't really get it, you know?
Now you get
but
it.
Yes.
Now you get it.
I get it, and you should go get it. Billy.
Yes.
the kid.
So in the game, it is a social deduction game. You can use certain cards to ask questions to try and narrow down who the other players might be, what their identity is. And then, obviously, you're trying to pair with the side that you're on. If you're trying to help Billy escape, you're going to try and team up with him. Otherwise, you will try to capture him. So there are cards that will allow you to escape the scene, like the train. And then there are other cards that will start the shootout to capture him. So if you're interested in that game, you can check out Get Billy the Kid from Caper Games. Kevin.
The superheroes are missing.
What?
Where are they? Everyone wants to know, and the villains have figured out that there is this void in the universe, and they are rising up.
Who will save us?
This is the premise of Sidekick Saga.
Oh.
So.
The sidekicks. Yeah. They're all that's left.
Yeah, so the sidekicks are taking the place of the superheroes, and you basically are becoming a side, or you are a sidekick trying to fight off the bad guys and the villains in Sidekick Saga from Subroutine, Return to Subroutine Games. Sorry. Our sponsor. I didn't want to slaughter their name. I apologize.
Too many times.
But Richard Saunders is the designer for this game. It's a game for 1 to 4 players. So you can play it solo, and it takes about 60 to 90 minutes. Now, a little talk about or discussion about the playing time is you can do scenarios and just play like one-off scenarios that they create in the book. But there's also a campaign with these really cool comic book sort of issues.
Cool.
And I think there's like five or six that I saw in the prototype. So I don't know how many there will actually be in the campaign. But the interesting part of the Sidekick Saga is as you are fighting villains, there's basically a grid of cards to represent different parts of the city, and you're going to different parts of the city to get more items, get things to help you out, and also to fight the bad guys. But there's also what they call a villain pyramid. And there's these like level 1 bad guys that you have to sort of defeat before you can get to level 2, to get to level 3, to get the big, big bad guy at the top. So you just can't go fight the big bad guy. So the way the mechanics work in the game is very interesting, and in how like it's almost like if you ever played Seven Wonders Duel, it has that sort of you have to get these 2 cards before you can access the next card. So I like that. For a Sidekick Saga, and I like that there's 2 different ways of playing with the episodes or with the campaign.
Do you think there'll be an expansion like henchman, not super villain?
Oh, like the other side? Probably not. But yeah, I think there's probably places for him to grow with more issues and more.
That's true. More campaigns.
More campaigns cool. For them.
Yeah, and it's cooperative.
Yeah, it's all co-op. So
with different player powers.
Yes, and if you'd like to see a video preview, you can check out our YouTube channel to see more about Sidekick Saga from Return to Subroutine. I'm so sorry. Return to Subroutine Games. Ryan, what do you have?
Well, coming March 7th is Age of Steam by designer Martin Wallace. The publisher is Eagle Griffin Games this time. They're bringing it back to Kickstarter with a new deluxe edition. So the gameplay hasn't changed. It's still the Age of Steam that everybody loves. But now we've got new art from... Ian O'Toole.
Yes.
Well done.
I was going to try to say the names of the games he's worked on, and I'm not going to get them. Anyway, Ian O'Toole... The art looks amazing. There's going to be 6 maps included in this box, and from what I understand, they're going to be the same size as previous editions, so you can still play with other maps that you've gotten, whether you've gotten them officially or from third-party creators. So definitely check it out. March 7th, Age of Steam Deluxe. Ooh. Will, you've got something else, right?
I do. I have The Dragon's Interest. This game is from designer Jesse Lee, and it's illustrated by Jeremy Jang, and it's got this really cool, I don't know what style of illustration, but just cartoony fun. I like the colors and the warmth of it. The it's a 3-5 player building game where you're building a city. I think the wars have just ended, and now you're, like, penniless. So, like in The Hobbit, you have to go and get money from the dragon. I don't know if they really do that in The Hobbit, but there's, like, this big dragon, giant gold pile.
And he charges interest?
He does. That's exactly what he does. Wow. And so you go to the dragon, you take out loans from his giant rich pile of money, and then you build your town. And I don't know if you have to, like, negotiate with the dragon what you're going to pay him back or what interest order it works in, but the whole point of the game is, like, borrowing just the right amount so you can build up your city, but then pay the dragon back, because otherwise he's going to come and burn your city down.
Wow.
It's a very business-savvy dragon.
Apparently, yes. And apparently it's a she, so she's business-savvy. And
you would think, being business-savvy, they wouldn't burn down the town, they would just repossess it.
That is a great point. Maybe she's not as savvy as we think she is.
Revenge.
But it looks really cool. They have like their own player shields, so they're kind of like keeping track of what money they have behind their shields. I think they can either like attack each other's cities or like borrow from other people's cities. I didn't quite understand that. But a lot of different stuff going on with interacting with the other players, as well as if anybody can't pay back their interest, I think the game immediately ends.
Yeah, that's true.
And somebody loses, or everybody loses. If you can pay back your interest at the end of the game, then whoever has the most victory points wins.
Okay.
It sounds like a pretty cool game. I don't think I mentioned it, but it's being brought by TMG, being republished as a Kickstarter. So.
And deluxe version.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. It looks like it has cool
Is there anyway. A minstrel in the game for
there
the dragon
should be.
To eat?
I was thinking that.
Ooh. Yeah. And I believe you guys are getting a copy to do a video.
Hopefully. That'll come in the mail, and we'll hopefully put a review together. So, yeah, we're
really
looking forward
quick.
To trying that one out. And it looks really cool, so I'm excited about it. Dragon's Interest. Sarah, what are you looking at one more?
Coming March 5th is Roland Wright.
That's what?
The dice game. Not
did you
Roll
say that
and
right?
Wright.
Not it Roland Wright.
The
Mr.
name
Roland.
The name Roland and last name Wright.
See what
with
they
a W
did there.
Yes. Okay. The dice game.
Cool.
But W-R-I-G-H-T.
Yes.
Not
and we can't talk
W-R-I-G-H-T.
About too much.
Well,
more.
This is from Perplexed. It's coming to Kickstarter Tuesday, March 5th. It is a 2-5 player.
Roll and write game.
And it's an average time for Roll and Write, 20 to 30 minutes. Cool. In the game, you are a game designer trying to make the best dice game.
Cool.
So you can check out, Will and I will have a video of this one, so you can see how the game plays. So check that out on YouTube. Kevin.
So, as we were talking,
mm-hmm. What?
I literally got an email from Gil Hova. Who is the owner and president of Formal Ferret Games.
Oh, yeah.
Melissa and I did a preview of High Rise a few weeks ago, but they had to cancel it just because of a couple of things. But I think one of the big things was just the cost involved. And he basically retooled things. He is basically bringing it back to Kickstarter this week. And just wanted to mention it, so check out High Rise, and there's a couple changes with how the buildings are being built in the game, but we really enjoyed the game, and it's definitely a more strategic, heavier type game, and it seems like he's definitely put new stuff together to help, I think, this new Kickstarter be successful. So, oh, and one more thing, Mayday Games is bringing Crokinole.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Kickstarter this week as well, so check that out. So if you like wooden crokinole boards.
A brief aside, Formal Ferret Games.
Yes.
FFG.
Yes.
There's also Final Frontier Games.
And?
And Fantasy Flight Games.
Yes.
It's very confusing.
Yes.
Especially because I always want to call Fantasy Flight
Final Fantasy Flight.
Totally. Exactly.
And then
why are there so many FFGs? Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe it sounds like rolls off the tongue. FFG.
Yeah, maybe.
Melissa.
Yes.
What's our last one?
The last one is coming on March 5th. So Tuesday is going to be quite full of games. Lots of interesting things on Kickstarter. And it's beginning of March. Yes. And this is season 2 of the graphic novel adventures from Van Ryder Games. Mm-hmm. Last year, they had season 1, and Ryan and I have both played some of those books. There was a Sherlock Holmes, there was Loop Garou with a werewolf kind of RPG-ish one.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I feel kind of bad because they were going to give me like a under the table really great deal if I bought all of them
at once. Yeah, the 5-book set.
And I was just not willing to make the commitment, but now looking back I'm like, I should have done it.
But do you know what? You should do something when you go to Gen Con this year. Maybe they'll do something for it.
We'll be like, remember that time a year ago? I was just some guy. Yeah.
Now
we'll talk to Evan.
Give me some more games.
So, anyway, we have season 2 coming, and I got to play one of the books, and I really enjoyed it. But I'm not going to say too much more, because we actually have Evan from Van Ryder Games coming as our next house guest.
Hey!
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this isn't your first rodeo here. We're glad to have you back as a house guest.
Hey, I mean, I'm happy. You just ask me anytime, and I will come.
Awesome. So tell our listeners, if they weren't here with us the first time, tell us a little bit about Van Ryder Games.
So Van Ryder Games, we publish board games. I know. Big surprise. But we also publish game books. We have a series of game books that we publish called Graphic Novel Adventures. They're kind of like choose your own adventures mixed with comic books. And I am the creative director for Van Ryder Games. So I handle all of our artists and all of that. Making things look pretty. Hopefully our games look pretty.
Yeah, you've had several successful Kickstarters. I was actually just looking at that. It looks like about a dozen or so. That's congratulations on that.
Yeah, our next one coming up in just a little bit. I'm not sure what number it is. It's 12 or 13, I think.
Cool. And that's why we have you on the show today to talk about this next Kickstarter for the second season of the Graphic Novel Adventures.
Yeah, so the first season was 5 books, and the second season is 5 more books. So we're really excited to expand the line and bring a whole new series of books to people who love the first ones and want more, and also people who haven't yet experienced how awesome these books are. They're really cool.
Yeah, I've personally played through 3 of them now, and I've really enjoyed each one. I played one of the Sherlock books from the first series in Your Town, and I've gotten a sneak peek look at Mystery, which is coming out in this series, and it has a superhero theme.
Yeah, it's Mystery is actually the name of the lead superhero of, I believe it's the League of Champions. They are recruiting other heroes into the fold, and you are one of these new heroes that's been recruited. So you, at the very beginning of the book, you start out coming into the league, and then you're trained and you go on different adventures and you upgrade your certain, you know, abilities. Maybe you upgrade flight, maybe you upgrade strength, or I think one of the abilities you upgrade is your wealth. So yes, you just want to be
super
like
super rich points.
That's right. Super rich points. So you can go like the Bruce Wayne, Batman angle and be like, I don't have any superpowers. I'm just going to be really wealthy. And that's how I'm going to fight crime.
Cool. Tell us a little bit about the other books that are in the series for the second season.
So the other books in the series for the second season, we've got Mystery. And then we have 2 more books with Sherlock Holmes. We have one called Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty, where in the first Sherlock Holmes book, Four Investigations, which was a part of the first set of the graphic novel adventures, you could choose to play as either Sherlock or Watson.
I remember that. That's cool. Yeah.
Well, in this new book, it's called Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty, you can choose to play as Sherlock, Watson, or Moriarty himself.
Ooh, get to play the other side of the coin. That's cool.
And how Moriarty works is it's really neat. When you're interrogating people or when you're questioning them, you can threaten them if you're Moriarty, which immediately shuts the conversation down. They won't talk to you again after you threaten them, but you might be able to extract a really valuable piece of information from them that only Moriarty can get. And then the other Sherlock book is Sherlock and Irene Adler, which is kind of his longtime on-again, off-again love interest.
Yeah.
And she's setting up a competing detective agency, and she kind of challenges you. And that's actually a two-player graphic novel adventure one of you plays as Sherlock and one of you plays as Irene. You see who gets the best score or does the best job solving the mysteries.
Okay.
And so that's three of the books, Mystery and the Two Sherlocks. And then we have two more set in a Pirates universe. It's Pirates, The Great Chase, and Pirates, The City of Skulls. And so in those, in the first one, you're hunting this fugitive down and he ends up making it to the city. And in the second book, you're exploring the City of Skulls.
Cool. What brought these five books together to make it in this new Kickstarter campaign?
So there are a number of different, and there's actually, we hope to bring even more books to the line later, but we pulled these five together specifically. One, because Sherlock from the first season is one of the most loved. It's one of the most beloved books. It's one of our most popular ones. It's one of our best sellers.
And I think that's the one we backed on the Kickstarter as well. I think we backed the Sherlock Holmes one.
A lot of people, when we're at conventions and stuff, and they come up and they're like, oh, this looks really cool. Let me figure out which one I want. And we've got five. And sometimes people will be like, well, give me the whole set. I need the whole set because we're all gamers and we always want to own everything.
Correct.
All the stretch goals.
Right. We're completionists, right?
Right. Absolutely. But then when people end up choosing just one book, they'll often gravitate towards Sherlock and pick that. Mm-hmm. And it's also one of my favorites. So part of it was that reason. We thought Mystery went well with it because it really is a different theme. The art in that is very colorful, very vibrant. And then the Pirates ones, we kind of didn't want to split them up. Although they can be played independently, they also kind of go together. So that was kind of how we brought this set together.
So, and this may be a hard question, but do you have a favorite book in this new series?
In the new series? Mystery is...
You make hard questions, Melissa.
It's like asking, like,
which child one of your children
is your favorite child? Well, I don't have a favorite child. I love them all equally. Mystery is really neat just because it's very different. But I still think probably Sherlock and Moriarty is my favorite. I think getting to play as Moriarty and threaten people was a really nice update and twist to how the Sherlock books work.
Cool. Well, I like to sort of draw the curtain back for our listeners for when we talk to publishers and things like that. So tell us a little bit about the benefits and challenges of Kickstarter from your perspective.
Wow, how many more minutes do we have, Kevin?
you can just name a couple. That's fine.
The benefits and challenges. Well, the benefit is really that we get to interact directly with our audience, and it's direct sales. There's no middlemen. I mean, other than Kickstarter, takes their little cut.
Correct. Yeah.
But for the most part, we get to go direct with people face to face, and we get to interact with them. And on the whole, we love the enthusiasm. We have a very loyal, very enthusiastic group of backers who always support us. We love interacting with them. We love the positivity and just the passion and the excitement. And it's really nice to be affirmed in that when we found a product or a game, whether it's something we picked up like the graphic novel adventures and brought over to the States, or whether it's something we've designed ourselves or something we've worked really hard on, you never kind of know, like, you know that you love it. I mean, that's our barometer for the things we publish and the things we make. Do we love it? Because if we don't love it, then we don't really want to, we don't really want to put it out into the world. But even when we do love something, like, we love the graphic novel adventures. I mean, we truly, truly love these books and this product, and we count ourselves very fortunate that we've had the privilege to bring them over and give them a new audience here. But you never know if other people, the consumers, the customers are going to like it. Like, okay. it could fall down like a wet turd. and so that really is one of the benefits of Kickstarter, is we get to kind of put it out there, and then without having to necessarily take huge amounts of risk, which is pretty dangerous for us as a very small company with only 3 employees.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can, if we make a bad bet, like, one bad bet, we're one really bad bet. I mean, we're really not, it's not that dire, but we have to be very smart with the products mm-hmm. we choose. And so Kickstarter really allows us to know how much to invest or how popular something's going to be when we put it out into the public square. So I think that's really one of the benefits. To one of the downsides, some of the downsides is it's very exhausting. And even though there is a lot of positivity, you always get some squeaky wheels in there. People who just aren't happy with anything you do,
mm-hmm.
Which is, we're asking for money up front. And yep. sometimes we're going to make them wait months and months and months for a product.
Yep.
And while our track record so far is impeccable, that's still a lot to ask of people. So I completely understand and sympathize with backers who get frustrated or want to see other stuff, or they demand things or whatever. That's kind of part and parcel with the deal. But that can be really exhausting, because we're human beings on the other end, and we treat everybody as professionally as possible, but that can really mentally tax you dealing with some people who can be very angry.
Yeah. So tell me about the length of the campaign then.
So this campaign is going to be 3 weeks, I believe.
Okay.
So right at around 20 days.
And it launches when?
It launches March 5th, Tuesday, which is about a week from when we're recording this. So yeah. I assume that when it goes up, it'll just, it'll be imminent.
That's right.
The Kickstarter is happening.
That's right. When this goes live, it will be the next day. This will go live March 4th.
All right. So tomorrow, the Kickstarter goes live tomorrow.
That's right. Kickstarter goes live tomorrow. And I know last, the first season, you sold a book for $19. Is the pricing going to be about the same, or?
It's going to be about, expect the same pricing. Yes. And you can also, if you get the whole set, you'll get it. If you get the whole set, you'll get a deal, and you also get the really cool exclusive slipcase.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's take a break here before we say goodbye, and tell us what's one of your favorite games that you've been playing right now.
So I have two. We are in the office. We're playing Betrayal Legacy.
Okay.
And we all love Betrayal at House on the Hill anyway. Mm-hmm. And yeah, any excuse to play that. Do you guys like it too?
Yeah, we play it every Halloween.
It's a tradition.
Yeah. So we've been playing the Legacy one, and we love it, and we are sad because we're very busy. We don't get as much time to play it as we like.
Yeah.
So that's one. And then the second one also happens to be another Legacy game. I just started Charterstone with my children.
Okay.
I've got a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 12-year-old. And my 10-year-old especially is not a big game player. Like, okay. He'll play with us, but oftentimes I'll be like, hey, Jacob, do you want to play with us? And he'll be like, nah, I'm good. Well, we got done playing Charterstone for the first time, and he said, Dad, can we play this tomorrow, and can we play it twice tomorrow?
Wow.
Which was really exciting. So I'm enjoying two Legacy games right now. Charterstone and Betrayal at House on the Hill Legacy are both fantastic.
Very good. Well, Evan, it was great having you on the show. For our listeners, don't forget March 5th, tomorrow, the second season of the graphic novel Adventures goes live. So check that out on Kickstarter. And where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find us at our website, www.vanridergames.com. And that's Rider with a Y. You can also find us on Twitter. Same thing, @VanRiderGames.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again, and we wish you the success on this campaign.
Bye!
Well, it was great having Evan on the show and hearing a little bit more about the 5 books in season 2. Those Sherlock Holmes books, they really sound interesting, being able to play as Moriarty in one of them.
Yeah.
I might have to pledge for some of those books.
And he said that he might try to come to TantrumCon next year because he has relatives that live nearby. So, and he's actually like used to live here.
Cool.
In South Carolina.
That's so awesome. I think Mark said the same thing. I don't know if we got that in the before we cut the audio or not, but hopefully we'll see a bunch of people.
But we said we wouldn't talk too much about TantrumCon because we need to talk about Tantrum House Kickstarter Season 6.
Yes, we do. So while I was in the car for 8 hours, I may have dabbled.
Oh, can we see it
live?
Do you
guys want to see my dabble?
Yes.
It's getting exciting over here. So this is what I started with. Not impressed.
Not impressive.
But then I got, there's the back of the card.
Okay.
Looking pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here's the tip number one.
Ooh.
So we're looking at the quest cards that we're putting together for each house.
Okay. So each studio?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think this is yours. Yeah. House D, Studio D.
Okay. It's like magic.
Yeah, yeah. Could be even more magical.
Okay.
Here's the blue house one.
Well, that looks more magical.
Yeah, that's more magical. I might have to switch that image. I don't know. Each card has its own, not every single one. Well, yeah, every single one. Every single card will have, similar to Keyforge style, will have a unique secret code name.
No.
Yes.
Yes. No.
That's what I'm working on.
Yes. So, it is possible. Will does know how to generate this onto the card. It is misspelling.
Some of them will be misspelled.
Here's the thing.
That's how unique they are. These were written in the car while
driving. What you're saying is someone can pledge for a studio card unique to studio.
Studio quest card.
Studio quest card that's unique to Studio 3, Studio Awesome, Studio D, or HQ.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And each card will have a secret code name unique to that person.
Entirely unique.
What?
And then each house, so you'll have like, if you pick the Studio 3 house card, you'll get your cool blue card with your secret, unique, totally unique code name on it. And it will also have a QR code that will lead you to a quest generated by Studio House 3. Studio 3. So I don't know, I can't say the words. So each of us is working on our own unique quest right now.
Right.
And it's not going to be like some crazy deep thing, but it'll be, you know, a fun little experience that you'll get to have. So you'll be able to try all 4 different ones if you want to, if you want to buy all 4. I think we'll probably do some kind of pledge level where you can get an individual one for cheap, or you can get all 4 if you want to.
If you do all 4, will the names be the same, or will they be different for each card?
I think every single one will be unique.
Every card will be unique.
Will they coincide? Like,
yeah, if they all connect together, what happens?
A 6-worded.
No. I'm talking about the back of the card.
Oh. Let's.
Okay, sorry.
Secrets.
Kevin, it's
okay. So. Never mind.
Okay, so there's the blue one.
Okay.
Here's the yellow one.
Nemesis Ember Mage. That sounds like a cool secret code name. Who's coming up with these list of words?
So I just put these in as placeholders.
So
I think each house will be responsible for generating, like pre-generating the initial list, and then we'll randomize it before we put it on there.
So we need like a.
And we might even submit names.
We could, submit your
additional idea. Because there are some categories that we're kind of using. Fill these names
out. So we need like
out.
Prefixes, and we need like names and like suffixes and things like that.
Right. And I do think that like, I think the first and the last can be kind of generic, but I think the middle word should be semi-specific to the house. So like yellow, I went with like yellow colors, like ember, blue, sapphire.
blustery?
I'm not sure where blustery came from.
Blustery is now a red color category.
Right, okay. Blustery. It doesn't have to be color specific, but.
Ooh, Quasar. Who's that? Is that Studio HQ?
Yeah, I think it is right now. Okay. We'll see. I went purple. I went yellow originally, or green. I went green originally.
What about
and
orange?
It didn't seem as cool.
I like purple.
Yeah, purple.
Let's see if purple and orange good. Clemson colors for
right?
them.
Right? I was thinking that as well.
Okay.
Those
are really, really cool, Will.
I'm pretty excited with how far they've come so far.
Let's talk about the card itself. It's not just a business card.
Right.
It is like, think of like a hotel card, right?
Yeah, like a plastic, like a credit card, basically, is kind of essentially what it would be. So, heavy-duty card. And we haven't quite worked out all the details yet, but if you buy a Tantrum Quest card as part of our Kickstarter, there will definitely be additional perks throughout the year that go with being a card-carrying member.
Of Tantrum House.
Yeah, so there might be like some Tantrum Con discounts or like special secret invite TantrumCon stuff.
Okay.
Access to, I don't know, we'll figure it out exactly. Okay. But that's the start. So we got a little bit of time to finesse and finalize things.
I like this a lot.
I'm pretty excited. I was having fun making these. All so right. We'll post some pictures of them probably sometime soon. Okay. With the blurred out QR codes.
Yes. And blurred out names.
We could probably have a couple example names, okay. But...
So we can get feedback from our community about names. That would be fun.
Oh, that'd be fun. That would be real cool, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, put a Google form or something together and people can submit.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty slick.
Woo!
Because we're going to run out of blue names.
No, we got plenty of blue names.
Should I open up the Excel document? I actually have more blue names than anything else.
You could just change blustery to bluestery.
Bluestery.
We'll have to think of some red names.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'd be fun. So that was my experience on the way back.
I like it. Well, you did a good job.
Thanks, man. I'm
looking forward to it.
And I'm excited about all the other stuff that Kevin has been working on too. The Kickstarter. Do we have a date?
Kickstarter is launching April 2nd.
April 2nd. So I got about a month to deck out the page.
Less than a month.
Less than a month. And make everything awesome. And I know a couple more promo cards came in this week as well, which is pretty exciting.
Yep.
But we can't talk about those because we're saving one per
week. Yep.
So join us next week and we'll talk about...
We're going to have an episode where we're going to have a lot of cards.
I know. Like catch up, yeah.
Well, we have to do it during the Kickstarter. Yeah.
We'll have one Kickstarter conniption that is basically... Tantrum House Kickstarter.
Probably that week.
I like that idea. Well, cool. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Thank you guys for having fun playing games and for covering for us while we were away for our game night. And we hopefully...
Oh, Melissa and Kevin will not be on the next episode.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that for just 10
so,
seconds.
So Melissa's parents asked if we could join them on a Caribbean cruise.
And you said, well...
Okay.
Yeah. So it was very nice of them to let us come with them. And Melissa's brother and his wife is joining as well. So there's going to be six of us going to the Cayman Islands, Belize...
Cozumel,
yeah, and so looking forward to spending a week.
It's gonna be cool.
Take some small games to play.
Yes,
while
we're
you're
gonna there. Bring my quiver of games and play some games on the boat or on
Excellent.
The ship.
Have you, Ryan and Katie, been on a cruise?
No, but we are going to St. Croix the same month.
Oh, like, I was going to say, maybe TantrumCon cruise
back,
at sea will be your first cruise.
Tantrum cruise.
St. Croix will be my first time out of the continental U.S.
Oh, cool. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So anyway, next week, you guys can handle it.
All right, we'll try to
I'll give
it
you one promo card you guys can talk
about. Okay, good. Sounds good. All right, well, thank you guys so much for joining us. We will catch you guys next time.
Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard. Thank you.
Holmes, Holmes.
What is it, Watson?
I think we might have a new case. How can we help, Miss?
It's Mrs. Fields, and I need you to settle a dispute. We have a small home with room for one table. My husband wants a fancy gaming table, but I believe a dining table is more important. I'm sure you agree with me, Mr. Holmes.
What if I told you I could satisfy both your wishes?
I'd say that'd be astounding, Holmes.
The answer is the Holmes, or perhaps the Watson, depending on the size of your room.
You're not making any sense, old chap.
Those are the names of an ingenious product from Game Toppers LLC. The Toppers are a portable solution that turns your current table into a high-end gaming table at a fraction of the cost.
Do you mean to say that the topper can be put on and taken off the table with ease?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. You truly are as amazing as people say. I will take a look at Game Toppers LLC right away.